This is Steve Bloom as Wolverine, and you're listening to Superhero Speak. Don't touch that dial, bub.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And we just got out of day one for us, day two of Wizard World Philly 2017. And talked to some people, had some fun. What were your initial thoughts of the con this year, John?
Well, let's do this. Last year, it felt like there was a big red carpet through the center of the entire place. It was a lot more crowded. It had almost a circus atmosphere to it, but it felt alive. Like there was a whole bunch of stuff going on. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't feel alive now, but it feels a lot more like the great Philly Comic-Con than it does the New York Comic-Con, right?
Yeah.
Because last year it felt like, you know, okay, this is just as big as New York. Now it's feeling more on the Philly side where, you know, there's no like big red carpet down the aisle. There's the, I guess the booths are a little bit laid out haphazardly. In an attempt to force people to see some of the new stuff, but at the same time, some of the places are put in booths where they really shouldn't have. And there's a lot more vendors. Like, we were accosted by
LASIK eye surgery. There was a remodel your home one. There was a
some other doctor thing.
Yeah, another doctor thing. A massage therapist thing. Guy's like, oh, you want a massage? I was walking by. I'm like, no. Sidestep you.
Yeah. And given that it changed management, I guess this is their way of filling out or rounding out the corners so that they can continue to try and grow it back what happened last year.
I think this is the second con since the new CEO took over. They definitely have changed things up.
Yeah.
Autograph area is this big circle area in the middle of the convention.
And it's right behind a big stage, which yes. We had a problem because we didn't get Nichelle Nichols yet. But the reason we didn't get her was because when we tried to interview her, she couldn't hear us due to the stage that being so
right
close
there.
You know, and she's in her 80s. So it's kind of hard for her to hear as it is.
Yes.
I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, so in typical Wizard style, it felt organized in a lot of ways. And I'm sorry, like you walk in, there's the stage as soon as you walk in, and then you can see vendors on the right and the left, and you can't see anything else. Like you walk around the stage, it's like, oh, okay, there's the autograph area. And you walk to the right, you have to go a little bit before you finally hit Artist Alley. Like, and there's no clear sign saying Artist Alley this way and vendors this way, gaming area this way. It's very haphazard.
I don't remember seeing a map either.
They had maps at the registration table when you signed in. But no one likes walking around with a map anymore.
Yeah, and it wasn't like last year they had the big album type, you know, commemorative booklet. You know, the large booklet.
Yeah, they used to have a booklet like that would list everyone that's there and then have a map and then a key. And it would be like, okay, they're in this area and you could find them that way.
And the schedule for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. This year, there's two slips of paper.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea what's going on at this con. Mm-hmm. There was that's another thing. Like, they did an awards thing, an honor for Rob Liefeld. You know, creator of Deadpool.
And nobody knew it
happened. And like only a few people knew it happened. There wasn't like a big announcement beforehand. And if there was, you couldn't hear it. I don't know. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. And it's Friday, which, okay, it's Friday. So people are still in school and working because school hasn't let out yet for the summer. So maybe it'll be more people tomorrow. But, mm-hmm. As again, then why are we having this con right after Memorial Day, the first weekend in June, like, does it work?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still, not to completely harp on it, it still looks and feels like one of the bigger cons that we go to. I mean, the only bigger one we go to really is New York at this point. And there are quite a few vendors. And Artist Alley is taking up more space than it did last year, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so it did seem like Artist Alley was bigger. Might have not been. I thought there weren't as many pirate artists there. There were a couple, and then I noticed there were a bunch in the vendor area. And I don't know if that's because maybe they've gotten a little more better about screening the artist in Artist Alley, but now flip it around, they're still selling them vendor tables, you know.
Yeah. The other thing is that with the vendors, we know that Xenoscope is there. I didn't see any others.
Well, no, there haven't been other publishers at Wizard shows in at least 5-6 years.
Yeah, and I've heard things about that their Wizard World is having trouble getting publishers to actually show up.
Well, they did something years ago, and the publishers haven't. They did something to Marvel years ago, and Marvel hasn't forgiven them for it. And then I don't know what the falling out with DC is. I don't know if it was just, you know, Marvel pulled out and DC's like, well, then we're not going to do it either. I don't know. Or they might have screwed DC over some way too. But yeah, but again, as we said, it's all new management. It's the second show with the new CEO.
They're going to have to make some changes.
So it's trial and error. And I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. And forgive me. Maybe in the next segment we record, I'll remember it or look it up before then. But he has a background. He worked for the CW. So he has a background in entertainment. So maybe, you know, he'll make some changes. Though, as we were walking out of the con this evening, on the main stage, ladies and gentlemen, there were 1920s flappers dancing to a big band version of In the Mood. And I don't know what that has to do with Comic-Con at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, they've had quite a few, acts go up on that stage. I'm not sure if that's a draw or not, but there were a lot of acts up there that didn't really have much to do with comic. And that's the whole thing. Like, a lot of these vendors that were brought in, nothing to do with comics. It's all filler.
Right.
All right. But again, yeah, I feel like I'm getting too down on them. And since they've had a major management change, things were going to be a little bit messy. We hope to see Xenoscope back next year, but I guess that's going to really depend on the next 2 days. And I hope that that the next 2 days are much better for all the other vendors, because it was light today.
Right. Yes, it was very light. We'll see what tomorrow brings. And hopefully we'll have more to report on then. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, enjoy our first of many interviews.
Yes. Yeah, everything sucks, but here's an interview for you.
We got two really great interviews today. And the first is Lex Lang, and he's a voice actor. He's done a lot of stuff. He was the definitive character in One Punch Man, right?
Oh, yes, Flashy Flash. Yeah, all those without those two lines that he uttered, that the whole thing would have been crap.
Exactly.
He's been on so many other things.
But he's been the voice of Batman and Poe Dameron on the Lego Batman or Lego Star Wars animated series, and just a ton of stuff. But you know what? He'll tell you all about it.
All the Metal Men in Batman Brave and the Bold, Young Wildcat. Captain Cold, Heat Wave, a number of different.
Right, Dr. Doom. And almost everybody.
This one is from Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Yeah.
And this is from Marvel Heroes, the video game.
So, are we recording?
Yeah, we're on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, we are now here with a gentleman who's played Dr. Doom and Poe Dameron.
Yeah.
And Captain Cold.
Captain Cold.
And Heatwave.
And Heatwave. And
so we could only be talking to Lex Lang. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing wonderful. How are you?
We're doing all right. This is our first interview of the weekend, so we're glad that it's you.
Glad to kick it off.
Yes. Yeah. And so a question we usually kind of like to start out with is voice acting something you've always wanted to do?
Well, this is my 22nd year of doing it. Like I always tell anybody who asks about voice acting, it's voice acting.
Right.
Not just I have a neat voice or whatever. And what's for me personally, I can't remember a time when I didn't want to be an actor. So since I was 5 years old, I was entertaining my family and eventually the kids at school. And then I got into drama class in high school and college, did a lot of drama and toured a little bit. And eventually started doing some stand-up comedy and a couple of on-camera things you can still find out there if you really search. And eventually someone recommended that I try voice acting because I do a lot of celebrity impersonations. And I've never looked back.
So, and that's one of the things I was going to ask you too, because we've interviewed voice actors who just do their own voice, just act in the role. And then we've worked with or interviewed voice actors who tried to do something different with each role.
Yeah.
Are you someone who tries to do something a little different with each role?
Yeah, I think versatility is definitely in my wheelhouse. And often the casting people and the producers, when I show up to the session, they'll know of work I've done before. So they might say, oh, hey, let's fashion this over this character a little. Why don't we add some gravel, change the pitch a little. And they feel confident that I can still act within those new parameters. Yeah,
right. Because so, like you had done Captain Cold and Heatwave in the same series.
Yeah.
So did anyone ever like go right back and say, oh, I realized it was the same guy? Or people are like, oh, I didn't realize you did both.
Most of the time it's I didn't realize you did both because we pick voices that are that we try to be different. But like you were saying, often I'm hired just to do to act within my own voice. So if I'm doing like something from an anime like Rurouni Kenshin, I might just add a little bit of Hero to it. And if I'm doing like Poe Dameron or something, I'll add a little bit of air to my natural voice. So when I go, I'll come back for you. It sounds more like Poe. You know, like it's got to
right.
More of that.
Do you know much about the characters before you do it? Like, do you do any research or do they come up with research?
If they're known characters, yeah, I always do research. Thank God for Google and Wikipedia.
Yeah,
because it really gives me the background on a lot of characters if they're already established. Mm-hmm. But often we'll be doing new original animation or original programming. And then it's up to the director and us and the actor to come up with what we want to do.
Well, what was it like? I have to ask you, is one of your credits here is Avatar.
Yes.
That was like a sleeper hit that everybody now loves and is a cult following. What was it like?
Well, that was amazing because, you know, first of all, just to be on the show was pretty awesome. But the caliber of actors that were there are just off the charts.
They're Mako so and good. All those.
And so, you know, I'd show up to the session, and it would be like a master class of just watching these other amazing actors work. You know, I'm always learning, and I'm always, like, trying to soak up technique and information and, you know, like, new twists on the voice and that sort of stuff. So it was amazing. It was really cool. And working with Andrea Romano was fantastic. I've worked with her in the past. In fact, she and Susan Chico, who is her assistant, or had been her assistant for many, many years, sort of helped me get into the world of original animation, Western animation.
Yeah, and that was like one of the first big ones, kind of blazed the path, you know, before that it was, well, people keep saying that it's anime. It's technically not anime because it's Western animation, but they're considering it anime.
The style of animation is anime style, for sure.
But it was just that good.
And we always hear that from other voice actors, it's a very tight-knit community. Like, you guys all work working together and usually help each other out.
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of advice would you give to somebody who wanted to get into the field?
Well, probably all the other voice actors have told you this. But there's a website by a very prolific voice actor named D. Bradley Baker. He's played a zillion things, and he plays all the clones in Clone Wars, you know. You've heard him a million times, I guarantee it, because he's been over the years in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of animated things. But he has a website that he made called iwanttobeavoiceactor.com.
Okay.
And it is the most comprehensive website I've ever seen. I wish it were around when I started. because it gives you everything you would need to know. I mean, everything. How to prepare, how to like go about the business side of it, how to get your demos together, how to do all that stuff. And I cannot speak highly enough about that because it's a phenomenal website. So if you're a voice actor listening and you want to know more about how to become a voice actor, iwanttobeavoiceactor.com.
Cool.
And so, I mean, and another thing we've heard from a lot of actors, and you said it at the beginning too, it's not just you have a funny voice, it is acting.
Yeah, yeah.
So as a voice actor, what have you found to be one of your most challenging roles?
Well, there it depends. There's two types of challenging for me because I do a lot of celebrity and I guess it would just be celebrity voice matching.
Okay.
And character voice matching too, I guess might be a good word for it. But one of them was I played Han Solo for several video games over the years, probably 5 or 6. And Han Solo's voice has a little bit of that, I would call it like a pinch to it. So when he goes, "Watch your mouth, kid, you're going to find yourself," like there's a little like,
right,
kind of a, not John Wayne, but like, a, you know, sort of a,
yeah,
rogue flavor to it, like the,
right,
tension in his voice. So that's real easy to do for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
But after 2 hours, like any muscle, if you were curling a weight for 2 hours, after a while you'd be like, "Oh my God, my arm isn't working anymore." Same thing with the voice. That was really challenging because after about 2 hours, instead of being like, I know, I see him, you know, it was like, I know. I sounded like Kermit the Frog or something.
Later, Chewy.
You know, so that was one. And then the other one, I did a character named Torvald in a game called Evolve, which is a game. He's this big, like, Norseman guy who had half his body crushed, and he's half, like, cyborg, half machine, half man. When I got to the session, they told me that I had about just under 3,000 lines that I was going to be recording over 3 days.
Yeah.
But about 2,500 of those lines were shouted, and 3 ways, not just one way shout. They said we're doing an A, B, and a C. The A is shouting over machine gun fire. The B is shouting over explosives and machine gun fire to someone 100 yards away.
Oh.
Wow.
And the C is when there's a full melee going on and there's bombs and rockets and everything exploding and the music's going and the big machines are going and everything, and you have to yell like to somebody 500 yards away.
Oh.
So it was literally a throat ripping few days, and I couldn't speak for 4 days afterwards.
See, now I used to be a singer, so I remember the levels being, it would go first Ludens, then Honey Tea, then drinking bottles of chloroseptic,
right?
Have you found like anything that helps you out when you're like in that kind of situation?
I can't recall the name of this Chinese product, but it's like a Chinese, you know, he'll know, Steve will probably know, but it's like a syrup that's designed to help the voice. It's like the miracle syrup. It's the miracle syrup. You can find it on Amazon, and I'm sure somewhere if you just look up Chinese syrup for voice acting on Google, it'll come up what it is. It's a lifesaver. It's amazing.
Oh. Did you have any, like, favorite parts? I mean, it's hard to pick.
It is hard to pick now, but I would say for me personally, anything related to Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars geek since I can remember, since I was like 10 years old. So, you know, when I would go to sci-fi cons as a kid, we called them sci-fi cons back then, or Star Trek conventions, or
right,
they ended up turning into Star Wars conventions, but I would always cosplay as Han Solo. So, you know, fast forward 20 plus years, and then I'm auditioning for Han Solo,
nice,
and I'm like, oh my God, there's actually a chance that I could be a real, like, if you look up Han Solo on Wikipedia, that my name would be there somewhere, you know? And
nice.
So, that came true eventually. I auditioned for, it was a game called Rogue Squadron 3. It was on GameCube.
Yes.
And I auditioned for Han Solo, and there were 1,600 auditions.
Oh, wow.
And they boiled it down to 8 people, two in each city, 2 in New York, 2 in Chicago, 2 in San Francisco, and 2 in Los Angeles. And I ended up getting the role. And when I got the part, my agent called me, congratulated me. And I hung up the phone and I ran around the room screaming like a girl, like, ah! Yeah, I was running around jumping up and down.
That
I was so excited.
Appropriate.
It was appropriate. And then I called my friends who I hadn't spoken to in like 20 years. I'd spoken to some of them, but I called the group that used to always go together to the cons,
right,
cosplaying.
Oh, yeah.
I called them up and I go, you never guess what I just got, you know. So, and then another real thrill for me was to do some stormtroopers in Rogue One, the movie Rogue One. I got to a couple stormtroopers and a couple of the little creatures in that movie, which was really fun.
Cool. So did you get to meet Harrison Ford?
I never met Harrison, no. Okay. I wish I would have.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't in Rogue One. I'm thinking of episode
No, I didn't seven. Do episode yeah. 7. Yeah. No, Rogue One. Yeah.
All right, so not to take too much of your time.
No, not at all. The other one, of course, is Batman. Anytime, you know, like there are only like 10 of us who've ever said, I am Batman at Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And so although we have great reverence and we know that Kevin Conroy is the
it's
Batman.
It's hard to beat that.
It's just, we all know and admire and respect and worship him.
Can you give us your best I Am Batman?
Best what?
I Am Batman.
Well, here's a great story. Let me tell you this story first.
Okay.
So I get my script. In the Batman Brave and the Bold series, there's a episode called Knights of Tomorrow.
Right.
And Alfred is telling this story.
I saw that.
And he talks about how Batman has gotten older and he's going to give his cape and cowl to Robin to become the new Batman.
Right.
So I get cast, and I'm reading the script. Okay, I'm playing Robin, and then Robin becomes Batman.
Right, right.
And then he's fighting the Joker's grandson.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Right?
Yep.
And he's fighting Joker's grandson, and then Joker looks up. You know, he's Batman standing on, like, two levels up, and Joker looks up and goes, "Who do you think you are?" And he goes, "I am Batman," right? That's what the words were.
Right.
So I get it, and I'm at home practicing, right? I'm like, "I am Batman." And I'm like at the coolest, deepest thing going on. And I get to the session and we get to that part. "Who do you think you are?" And I go, "I am Batman." And the director goes, okay. Remember, it's Robin being Batman. I go, "Yeah." I'll go, "Oh, okay." So it's still intimidating, but so then I go, "I am Batman." And she goes, "We're getting closer. Can you pitch your voice up a little more?" And now I'm starting to go, but the first one was the Batman. You know, and then she goes, "Just pitch it up." So then I'm like, "I am Batman." And she's like, "Pretty close. We're almost there. We'll pitch it up a little more. Can you make him more wimpy?" So then I go like, "I am Batman." And they're like, "Awesome." But the beauty of it is, the real joy of it for me was that when we were doing the actual recording and we got to that part where I go, "I am Batman," the engineer stopped, and the entire production team, including the director and everybody, stood up and they did a standing ovation. And they said, "You are one of the very few people in this planet who've gotten to say, I am Batman."
Yes.
And so to me, that is like the biggest thrill. I feel so grateful to the universe.
Is it at that point after you say it, wimpy, that Kevin Conroy just appears out of nowhere?
Yeah.
And, "You're not Batman."
No, you're supposed to say. No, actually, it was great because I was at Wizard World Cleveland with Kevin.
Oh.
And we were at this signing area where they had the tables all kind of set into squares. And he came up to my booth and he saw my Batman here and he saw the Batman over here and stuff. And he put his arm around me and he goes, "Kind of nice that a couple of Batmen can hang out in Cleveland, huh?"
So couldn't hear. I said, "Kind of nice that a couple of Batmen can hang out together in Cleveland." Yes.
And it was so like classy of him to be like so confident and so like settled with knowing who he is.
Right,
that he can
right.
come and like put his arm around me and like say, like, "Hey, we're and I said, "No, you're the Batman." And I was like bowing to him, you know, with my hands like kowtowing to him. And he said, no, there's enough Batman to go around, you know. And he was the coolest guy. I can't speak highly enough about him.
Very cool.
Cool.
What else are you into? I mean, when you go to these Comic Cons, is there anything that you like to go see or do Doctor Who stuff or you?
Yeah. I mean, let's see. Well, like I said, Star Wars is my main fix at these. I like Artist's Alley, or okay. I don't know what they call it here, but like at other cons they call it the Artist Alley.
Yeah.
It's like where the people who draw and paint and create things, that to me is the best. Because you can go and you can just see like the unique personalities of these creative people showing up on their work.
Yeah.
And you could see Batman like you would not see it anywhere else. You could
right.
see, you know, Sonosuke from Rurouni Kenshin like you wouldn't see. Then you see the little chibi versions, and then you see like the little bobblehead versions and all the cool like plush toys and things that people build. It's really cool. That's one of my favorite parts. And, you know, because I'm here as part of the group of guests, it's also a real thrill to meet the other guests that are here.
Yeah.
You know, over the years, I've become friends with Lou Ferrigno and other guests that are here as well. And it's kind of nice to bump into each other. And there's a little geek inside me saying, wow, I'm sitting with the Hulk. You know, my friend is the Hulk, the actual first Hulk. You know,
cool.
So fun.
I guess it never rubs off.
It never wears off.
Thing.
And it's not that we're starstruck. It's more that it's like a deep admiration for the person. You know, that's how I feel about it anyway. I'm sure there's starstruck people who are like shivering or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's like really cool.
All
but
right.
You're part of it.
So, question that we normally like to wrap up
okay.
on is, how do you measure success?
How do I measure success? Well, I think I would measure success by the amount that you know yourself.
Okay.
And the amount of peace or happiness that you find you have in your day, if it's more than frustration and stress, then that's success.
Right.
Not to be too cliche or whatever, but I'm a meditation teacher also. I've been a meditation teacher for a few years. And it's been a real life changer for me as far as like just being able to take a state of mind where if something difficult happens in life, rather than being whipped around by it, after you practice for a while, you can get what's called like the observer perspective. So you still see the situation for what it is, but you're right. No longer like influenced by the situation itself. You're able to like discern and make good healthy choices
right.
for yourself. So,
cool.
You know, I definitely think if you lead a happy, healthy life, like you have good health also,
yeah.
That's about as successful as you could be, you know?
Yeah.
All right. What's you have anything coming up?
I do. What's coming up?
You want to look for?
Let's see. Well.
Anything you can tell us?
I'm trying to think what I can tell you. Okay, let's see. The Insane Trilogy from Crash Bandicoot is coming out in about 20 days from now.
Okay.
I'm back as Dr. Neocortex. Oh, yes, Dr. Cortex here. And then World of Warcraft is coming out. I play Kil Jaeden, who is one of the leaders of the Burning Legion.
Ooh, okay.
He's a pretty cool dude. And
that must have been a nice voice.
Yes.
Listen, mongrels.
He calls people mongrels a lot. And what else? Gosh, I wish...
The 80th series of Digimon.
I'm not in Digimon Try. Mm-hmm. They recorded that while I was out of the country. And my friend Kylie Bear is... plays Wargreymon for me on that one.
Oh, okay.
Or for them, really, not for me.
Right,
for them.
Right.
And then I've got some new Batman toys that are coming out from Mattel.
Oh,
so
cool.
There's going to be a whole bunch of really cool, like, some virtual reality ones, also some ones where, like, the car, the Batmobile is going around and the kid or the adult wears the headset.
Oh.
And then you hear Batman talking to you from the car. You know?
Cool.
You're no match for me, Joker.
Is that where you use the original, the first version of your I Am Batman voice?
Yeah. Well, actually, the very first I did, the first time I was cast as Batman was for a motion graphics comic on iTunes called Batgirl Year One.
Yes.
Oh.
And so I play Batman in that. And when I got there, I was like, well, which Batman do you want now? There's been so many Batman. Mm-hmm. And right around that time, Christian Bale was Batman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted a lot of that.
You have no right here.
Like, where you, it's a lot of that.
Yeah.
That must be fun.
You must understand.
You know, it all sounds very passionate, you know?
Right.
But Mattel did not want that. Mattel, when I went there, they wanted more of a Kevin Conroy sound.
Oh, good.
Which is just like I'm a billionaire.
You know? You'll like this when you hear it later. It's hard to hear in this big convention center, but.
Oh, this is cool.
So the toys are coming up, and. What else? We did some more Naruto for those who like anime.
He was the sleepy voice, right?
Oh, he was the guy who had the cough.
He was always sick, right?
It was an unknown illness that you thought was going to be his downfall and his death, but he ended up being killed by someone he was betrayed by later. Came back in a flashback a few years later. But that guy I always said was like my Charlie Sheen voice. Because that's how I would get into character. As soon as this announcement's over, I'll do it.
This is where we get the NPR ambiance, you know?
Yeah. So like the so like before I get into character,
I would sit there and I'd go, okay, Charlie Sheen sounds a little bit like this. He's like, okay, I'm going to go see the goddesses later. Okay, I'm about ready to record. Okay, let's do this. So I'd be like, next up, Naruto.
You have to call. It'd be like Charlie Sheen at 5 a.m. And
that's awesome.
You're the few who know that story. It's one of the cool. First times I've told that. It's usually just to other voice actors or director I tell that one to.
Cool. All right. So our fans will keep an eye out for all that stuff.
Oh, one other question. Ah. But, sorry, I have to ask. So how pivotal were your two lines for Flashy Flash in One Punch Man?
They were very unpivotal. They were just, you know, supportive story, you know. It's part of the exposition that constantly goes on in that show.
But they are going to do a second season.
I believe they are, yeah.
And he does actually show up in some of the later manga.
Hopefully I'll come back. Hopefully, yeah. I'm working on a show called Berserk now, too.
The Berserk.
Berserk, yeah. That's coming. And then I did a version of Dragon Ball Super for Asia. They have a different voice cast for Asia. Asia and India, I think it is. So that was a lot of fun. I mean, it was really a joy to be able to be a part of that, franchise.
Doing it in English?
In English, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. I play Goku in that version.
Oh.
So, the longtime Goku is here at the convention today, too.
Yeah, we're supposed to talk to him at some
point. Yeah, he's a real nice guy. Real good guy.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and, you know.
Awesome. It's been awesome being spoken with.
Yes, thank you for your
from
time.
From you. You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Superhero Speak with Lex Lang. That's me.
All right, and we're out. Well, yeah. What can I say? Hey, I love these voice actors. They're usually the most... They're usually the most animated interviews we have.
That's good. I like that one. Yes. And speaking of voice actors, we talked to another one today.
Yes. This is going to be voice actor day.
You may have heard his voice at the very top of this podcast. And so, yes, he did the voice of Wolverine in many adaptions all the way back to one of the early X-Men video games.
He's been on tons of anime like Digimon, Big O, and a whole bunch of others that I just can't even begin. Even some of, the animated Transformers. He was Starscream.
Yes.
The computer animated one that was out a couple of years ago, only a couple ago.
Yeah. And then, of course, he's also, what's the character's name? Dex or Bex or something from Star Wars Rebels.
It's like a million voices just cried out and told you, can't you know what the name is?
It's a short name. That's all I know. Yes, as you can tell, I don't watch Rebels. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Forgive me. So, anyway, we're botching this intro. I'll just shut up and let Steve Blum talk to you guys.
Yep, that'll be much more enjoyable. Yes.
We're live at Wizard World.
I found my new ringtone.
Mostly alive, anyway. A little bit undead.
Well, there is, the Walking Dead digits over that way.
Yeah. Let them take that little clip. It's all good.
All right, so we are here with a gentleman who has been in Star Wars Rebels and what was the name of the movie? Rogue One.
Yes.
Ben 10 and a lot of Marvel cartoons as... I would say the definitive voice of Wolverine.
Oh, thanks, Bob, but I am no gentleman.
So, of course, we're here with Steve Blum. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So, you're very well known in the industry, and you've been doing this for a long time. But a question we do like to usually start out with, is this something you always wanted to do?
Probably, but I didn't know it at the time.
Okay.
I've been doing voices since I was a little kid. It's just... it was sort of my only superpower. I was bullied when I was a kid and very insecure, and it was the deep voice was really the only thing I had to keep me alive. And I didn't know that I could manipulate it professionally until I was probably well into my late 20s.
Okay.
I had three other careers, and I was a starving musician, and I was working in a mailroom to kind of support that habit.
Right,
and
right.
got hired as a creature on an anime called The Guyver just yep. because I had the deepest voice in the mailroom.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so I started doing it. It was still for fun. It was mostly for food because I was starving. They promised me free breakfast and lunch.
Right,
and
right.
I just kept doing it all these years, and I kept doing it on the side while I stayed at that same company and became an executive at that company. It was a film company, and I realized that I was hating going to work every day because the people in the film industry are so nasty.
Okay.
And I booked a 7-Eleven commercial and thought that I could quit my job and buy my first house. And then realized that it was a short-lived thing. The union went on strike, and I struggled again for another few years. But I just continued to do voice work because I love to do it, and that is still the motivating factor today.
Cool. So, since you have done Wolverine in quite a few iterations of cartoons, how did that come about?
I auditioned for it, like everything okay. else. The first thing I did was the game X-Men Legends.
Yes.
And when I audition for things, I just do it from an organic perspective, as though I'm reading the comic and that's the voice I'm hearing. And fortunately, I was of age enough where I could do that voice.
Right.
Because I had that voice in my head since I was much younger, but I couldn't get it out. It kind of came out like this. So fortunately, when that audition came along, I just did the voice that I heard in my head when I read the comics, and they agreed. And it was as simple as that.
Wow.
Now, but did you have to keep auditioning for Wolverine, or did they like you so much they kept hiring you after that?
Pretty much every single time I've played Wolverine, I've auditioned again.
Oh, wow.
It's Marvel licenses out to a bunch of different production companies,
okay,
and they all want to make sure, A, that I can still do it, and B, they want to sort of put their own print on it. So they just want to make sure that I'm the right guy for the project. There have been a couple exceptions. A couple other people played Wolverine in the interim, but they're all my friends, so I don't care. It's fine. Let them trash their throat for a little while. It hurts. Wolverine hurts.
Right. I mean, we were actually just talking to Lex, and he was talking about that some of the characters do a number on your throat. Like, do you have a secret of how you heal yourself from that?
The healing factor helps.
Yeah. I was going to say.
No, it's a lot of shutting up. That is the biggest secret. Hydration. I drink a lot of water, probably more than anybody I know. But literally, I limit my sessions to 2 hours now if I know there's going to be anything vocally stressful. In mm-hmm. fact, we're trying to get that contractually written for video games now for everybody, because I can demand that because I've been doing it long enough. A lot of the actors coming in, they have to work 4 or 8 hours screaming the whole time, and you can do permanent damage that way. So,
Dragon Ball Z people too.
Oh my god, I can't even imagine. I mean, I've done a lot of screaming stuff, but that's pure pain. So yeah, I have Chinese herbal throat drops that I have it with me at all sessions. I drink a lot of water, no coffee, no milk, no sugar. I have a strict regimen about that kind of stuff when I'm working. But it's really just recovery time, sleep, shutting up, and water.
Right.
And you've done some higher pitch voices too, like Gilliman.
Gilliman.
And Poromon also from that series.
He's way up here.
And Starscream's more gravelly.
Starscream started here, but he does go up into the girlies.
Exactly.
Place, yeah.
So is that that range, right? Did you have to learn to do that, or is that just coming naturally?
Well, like I said, that's the only thing I know how to do. So fortunately, I've always been able to do that. The hard part is really controlling it and knowing what's going to come out before I open my mouth. And that just took years of doing it in muscle memory, because there was a time when I was working on Digimon, actually, where I had to go from character to character to character within a day and not knowing what was going to come out. And I had to kind of do it in the corner and get that voice print coming out of the throat before I could come back up to the mic. Now I can just kind of come up to the mic and I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's something I've always wondered, because you get people like you and Tara Strong and those kinds of people. It's like, there's hundreds of voices, and I'm sure you get people that come up to you all day, can you do such and such? And it's like, wait a second, I have to remember.
You got to go through the Rolodex in the brain, And sometimes I don't remember if it's a more obscure character. Fans love to try to pull that on me all the time. And I just say, if you can play it for me, I can duplicate it in a second. Not all of them are logged into memory, but most are at this point. And Tara's just, she's as sick as I am, so...
So you said that you were bullied as a kid.
Yeah.
So you're a fellow nerd, I assume.
Yeah. Not a good nerd. I don't know as much as you do about even my own career, but But I certainly have that tendency.
So I'm saying, what I was going to ask is, did you read comics or anything like that as a kid? And is that what drew you into wanting to do these kinds of voice roles?
Yeah. Well, my grandfather owned this big, beautiful bookstore in Hollywood called Cherokee Books when I was a kid. It was actually a really famous place.
Okay.
And they had a comic book department there, and my uncle ran it. This crazy hippie, really cool guy, long hair and pan pipes, and his best friend was R. Crumb.
Okay.
So my very first job was sorting comics in that facility.
Oh, cool.
At 12 years old.
Right.
And so I would spend a lot of time by myself in the attic above this place, smelling trash and Chinese food coming up from the alley.
Right.
Just reading through these comics, and these voices were just in my head all the time, as a lot of us have expressed. When we're reading comics or manga or novels, we hear those characters' voices. They sort of come to life, I think, in our heads.
Right.
And it was just a matter of expressing that outwardly for me. So I didn't know that I was going to be doing this for a living. I'd never even thought that it was possible to make a living at this.
Right.
My parents still didn't think it was possible until about 3 or 4 years ago when I brought them to a convention and they saw that I actually had a following at this. They haven't seen anything that I've done. And my dad actually sat next to my sister at a convention with 2,000 people in the audience. And he looked over at her and he said, they're all here to see him. And she goes, shut up, Dad. Just watch. So, yeah, I mean, it's just one of those weird industries that nobody knows how to get in. Nobody really understands what the industry is until you're actually immersed in it. So now I just keep waiting for them to find out that I have no idea what I'm doing. And I've been faking it all these years.
Along those lines, what kind of advice would you give to someone who wants to get into the industry?
Yeah, well, there's a website that I highly recommend by D. Bradley Baker, who's one of the greatest voice actors in the world, one of my dear friends, and it's called iwanttobeavoiceactor.com. So I would suggest people start there first. It's free, which is the best part, because
right.
It's like a free master class that people would have paid $10,000 for in the past.
Right, right.
I would suggest going there and digging through that website and really learning as much as you can about the business. Start taking acting classes, take improv classes. And after you've done all that, you'll kind of know if you're built for this business or not. Dee tells you in no uncertain terms what the business is and what it isn't.
Right.
There's a lot of misconceptions. People think we just go up and fart into a microphone and make $1 million. It's so much more complicated and
right.
so much more competitive than anybody really realizes from the outside. So I would do that legwork first. And then there are classes that you can take, live classes that you can take with working voice actors and with working voice directors. And I would suggest going to the people who are doing this every single day. Don't go to somebody who wants to be in the industry and decides to teach a class and thinks they know everything about it, because they
right,
don't.
Right.
They're not in the trenches every day. And it evolves every day, too. So I get asked this question so often that I'm actually creating a brand new website now where I'm going to have stuff for every level. For entry level, it'll be free.
Oh.
There's going to be subscription things with a newsletter
okay.
to help people sort of familiarize themselves with the industry. And then we'll go all the way up to masterclass level.
Cool.
We're just starting to build that now. And I want to do that because I can't stand to see people getting taken advantage of in this industry by the predators that are out there and that promise gigs and promise all sorts of things they can't deliver on. And so we'll take a very realistic, very organic approach. And that'll be ready within a year. We're working on it now. We'll have the website up in its infancy form in about 2 or 3 months.
Okay.
But I'll announce that on my Twitter feed.
Cool.
So you're, besides like all these characters and all that you do, you're a nerd. So what other stuff, like you're at these conventions, right?
Yeah.
What other stuff like do you sneak out to go see? What do you like?
Oh my God. I love The Walking Dead. I just started watching that. So
okay.
I'll go over and say hello to those guys at some point. I've met a few of them behind the scenes here. So it's kind of cool. It's weird being here because we get to go backstage in the green room and we're hobnobbing with these crazy luminaries. I just rode over here with Nichelle Nichols.
Oh, wow.
And we're listening to her sing Fly Me to the Moon.
She sang.
Well, she wasn't singing in the car, but her handler had Spotify and she was playing some of her tunes, singing with these amazing bands. And I had no idea that she did that. It was one of the most amazing experiences sitting with her and listening to her music like that. I didn't even know she sang. So those things are just astonishing. And I go to like fanboy puddle when I'm sitting here next to Lou Ferrigno. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I just have to share this real quick. I used to volunteer for Wizard.
Yeah.
And I did a New York show. This is going back probably like 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And Nichelle Nichols was there. And I was actually working for Mike Hogan from Battlestar Galactica at his table. and she would come over and talk. And every other celebrity that comes over, they talk to Mike, and I just stand there and watch the table.
Yeah.
And she made sure to include me in the conversation.
That's amazing.
So I always like to tell that story because she's a class act all the way.
Yeah. I haven't had much time to talk to her yet. I've met her at other conventions on the periphery, but this convention, I actually want to sit down with her and have a real conversation. I'm a big fan, too.
Who isn't, right?
Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. What a beautiful, sweet lady. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, you've got, like, a line here. So... the way we like to sign these things off is to ask a question.
Yes.
Which is going to be fun. Go ahead.
How do you measure success?
Yeah. Because I.
How do I measure success?
Yes.
Well, that's a deep question.
Yeah.
I measure success by joy, by levels of joy. And the way I find my joy is, especially in this business, is by hearing the effect that we've had on the people who consume this stuff. When we thought that we were just barking and spitting in a rubber room alone and didn't know if there was going to be an audience for this, to see that people have gotten through difficult times by connecting with these characters, to see that somebody got through cancer, to see that somebody stopped themselves from committing suicide, to hear that an autistic voice spoke for the first time by connecting with a character, that to me is success. All of this other stuff is Hollywood. And this is the fun stuff. This is the stuff that I would do anyway, even if I didn't get paid for it. Don't tell my agent that. But success to me is really defined by joy. And I'm surrounded by people that I love. And I get to do what I love every single day and meet fans where we share a mutual love. That to me is the definition of success.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Can I ask, and you can say no, can we get Wolverine and just say this is Steve Blum and you're listening to Superhero Speak?
What is it?
This is Steve Blum, and you're listening to Superhero Speak.
Superhero Speak.
This is Steve Blum as Wolverine, and you're listening to Superhero Speak. Don't touch that dial, bub.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Cool. So I hope you guys all enjoyed our coverage of Wizard World 2017 Day 1. And keep your ears and eyes tuned for Day 2. To be coming to a podcast listening device near you soon. And until then, don't let your cape get caught in the door.